I'm John Batchelor. Mary Kissel's with me from the Wall Street Journal. We started with the no-fly zone and the remarks about the United States Senate, not very many. The no-fly zone news is 10 to nothing in the United Nations Security Council, 5 abstentions significantly, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Germany. The no-fly zone resolution is published. It has restrictions. It has recommendations. It does not have a clear-cut path to victory. So I welcome now Pat Lang, who keeps the website Six Semper Tyrannis, many years a veteran of watching the U.S. military from the Defense Intelligence Agency. That's the DIA. That's the uniform spooks and their analysis and their technology. And Larry Johnson of No Quarter, who has many years, too many years of his youth at CIA and State. Here we are in the 21st century, gentlemen. A very good evening to you. Pat, 10-0 at the Security Council. You've recommended this for weeks. Is it too late? And what is to be done, Pat?
No, I don't think it's too late. In 1986, when we attacked Libya, I was in charge of the targeting at DIA for this set of operations at Benghazi and Tripoli. And I have a very good idea what the Gaddafi regime's air defense assets are like, and are largely untended for the last 25 years. We lost one airplane then, probably due to a gun on the ground in Tripoli City. So it's certainly not too late. I mean, these people, Gaddafi's forces are all really in the open out in the desert. And you can be sure the American intelligence community, including my old colleagues at DIA, have been lining these guys up on the charts for a couple of weeks now. So if the Obama administration wishes, in fact, to take action against these people, there's enough authority, I think, in the resolution so that they could put Mr. Gaddafi back on his heels pretty thoroughly.
Larry, the British and French are out front. I'm not sure about Washington. Do they wish to take action and use our fleet?
Well, yes. I think they'll call upon our fleet resources. And I was, frankly, stunned that both China and Russia decided to just abstain. They could have vetoed this. This tells me that they see it in their interest to go with the Arab League and to go along with, at least tacitly, with the no-fly zone. The weaponry has changed considerably since the operations that, you know, Pat oversaw back, several years ago, more than 20 years ago. Because we can now send in cruise missiles that can crater airways without having to put a plane in the air. So, you know, I think this is significant, but, you know, the irony is the United States is not going to get a lot of credit for this because we waited so long, and it was other countries that got out in front. The United States showed no leadership on this, and by showing no leadership gets no credit.
Pat, Mary here.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit to the Arab League and its decision to back a no-fly zone? And secondly, what is their capacity, if any, or interest in participating in any kind of operation that goes down tomorrow?
Well, I think you can attribute the Arab League's resolution largely to Amr Moussa's leadership. He's seeking to put himself on the side of the angels in view of his presidential ambitions in Egypt. And although he's no longer the head of the Arab League, he still remains tremendous power and patronage there. As for the capability of the Arab states to participate in this effort, they really have the ability to field some aircraft and people to fly them, but no capability at all, really, to generate the staff planning, the maintenance, the targeting, all that kind of thing. That would have to be provided by us or the French. They certainly don't have any ability to do that. Somebody asked me today, you know, haven't these people learned anything going to our schools all these years? Well, the answer is not. They haven't learned that, no.
Larry, the question here is, if we use the fleet, are we at war?
Technically, yes. But apart from Congress declaring war, what we've seen is another one of these, quote, police actions. The benefit we have here is that at least we've got the full support of the Arab League, as well as most of Europe, without Germany weighing in. But France has taken the lead on this, and I think, you know, candidly, the United States probably owes the French an apology for the freedom fries and the surrender monkey comments that preceded the invasion of Iraq, because the French really have stepped up and taken the lead here.
Well,
and, I think it's significant. Obviously, Gaddafi was really quite miffed at the UN action tonight because he is really having an upset tummy night.
Pat?
Well, as Larry knows, I have never subscribed to that view of the French. But in fact, I think the most interesting question here is not with regard to our capability, which is certainly easily sufficient to deal with Gaddafi's forces. It really is, why did American policy change over the last 48 hours? And I talked to some people at who are in a position to know today, and I have the impression, in fact, that it was a fear that if Gaddafi's counter-revolution succeeded, then, in fact, counter-revolutionary forces would be encouraged across the rest of the Middle East out to the Persian Gulf. And President Obama, who seems to conduct his foreign policy as though he were the brightest grad student at a seminar, is committed to the idea of revolution without any sort of internal contradiction. And that was unacceptable, and that seems to have changed our position.
Let's go to Bahrain. Now, no, Larry, there's too many fires. Go ahead quickly.
Quickly before we get there, the fact that Tom Donilon, the National Security Advisor, spoke out against this policy, to me, tells me that Hillary Clinton played a decisive role in getting this thing through.
Bahrain, the two kings talked to the President of the United States 24 hours ago. Today, the information is that I read you both from the Wall Street Journal's report today. Sinopec, is that correct, Mary?
Sinopec.
That's a Chinese oil company, has signed a deal to invest in a Saudi refinery. 35% of the Red Sea refining company, the rest of it owned by Aramco, which is the Saudi Arabian oil company. We have talked the last several days that the Saudis are now in a proxy war with Tehran, and the battlefield is Bahrain. Pat, can I measure that this deal with China today is a bona fides, that Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, has decided to move toward Beijing and away from Washington?
I think you certainly can. I have known a number of very senior Saudi military officers for a number of years, and a couple of them who are in very high positions now have written papers in their earlier years in which they advocated the fact that that Saudi Arabia should move away from the United States and toward China. So I think that the events of the recent weeks and months have probably made them even stronger in that position. So I think you're very justified in thinking that.
Mary here, just one more quickly for Pat. What steps has China done to advance this relationship prior to the Sinopec deal?
Well, I think this is part of their general foreign policy and economic policy across the world, as you're very aware, I'm sure. You know, they have deep investments all over the Arab world and in Africa, wherever they have been able to do them, and they're seeking to become a dominant world power, and a large part of that is the growth of both economic and defense relationships. And so I think that you have seen that. And their longstanding relationship to Saudi Arabia through the intermediary of Pakistan, I think, is a convenient thing. As you know, that the Pakistanis are pretty displeased with us, especially after the latest disastrous airstrike today.
Larry, what does it mean that the Saudis, who command the Gulf Cooperation Council, are bringing the Chinese in and inviting the Fifth Fleet headquarters to move out of Bahrain and turning their backs on Washington? What does that mean for the stability of the region, Larry?
Well, it means that the United States is going to have substantially less influence there. The likelihood that the region could be significantly more anti-Israeli than it already is. But, you know, as Pat noted the other night, it goes against the cultural grain and the religious view of the Saudis to deal with communists. And the fact that they're willing to entertain a deal with a communist China shows how significant the break is with the United States and how much the loss of confidence and the loss of faith vis-a-vis the United States is. I mean, this really is a watershed moment in history, and historians will look back at this period over these last 2 years where, you know, Barack Obama, whether fairly or unfairly, will be seen as having lost the Middle East for the United States and set in motion the dawn of the era of Chinese influence.
Pat, you know the Saudi Arabian forces very well. You've served there. You worked with them for years.
Yep.
Are they tough guys? Do they have it to go up against the IRGC?
Well, the question of projecting power across the Middle East across the Gulf should not be seen just in terms of that kind of sheer military force. The Saudi forces are quite capable of dealing with civil unrest of the kind we're seeing now. If there were to be a Shia government in Bahrain that was essentially a satellite of Iran, And then the situation would be different. You'd have a situation of a potential political subversion across eastern Saudi Arabia, and this would not essentially be a question of who could fight who the hardest. It would be a question of who could win that battle for political legitimacy.
All right, let me look at it another way. Are the Saudis capable of pulling the trigger if it has to be pulled in this proxy war? Will they hit Tehran hard if they have to, Pat?
I don't think they really have the capability to do that. They don't have much of a capability to project power across the Gulf into Iran. They have an air force, but it is, as I described, largely a matter of people who can fly airplanes, can take off and land and drop bombs on a range. They don't have the kind of staff planning capability that would be required to conduct a sophisticated air war.
So who do they sign on with then? Is that what China looks like?
I think they're going to sign on with the Chinese and the Pakistanis in order to provide that kind of stiffening. That seems to be in the cards at the moment.
Larry, what you've outlined, and Pat as well, but this question is for Larry, is of concern to the United States, but it's also of great concern to Israel and to continental Europe. Have any of those national leaders expressed concern at this trend that you've both just outlined so convincingly?
No, and that's what is just, to me, totally shocking. You know, when you look back in the context of the aftermath of World War II, where Harry Truman with George Marshall, a VMI graduate like Pat, they saw strategically what needed to be done and moved quickly. We are now, and again, I've been known for beating up Barack Obama more for fun than anything, but, you know, really sincerely, in this time, he has exposed his inexperience and lack of understanding. You know, you had Tom Donilon, the National Security Advisor, today say, Libya is not a vital strategic interest. Now, he may be correct from an academic standpoint, but he doesn't understand the geostrategic position that the United States is in or should be in. So what we are really witnessing a dramatic shift in power and influence today, where the United States, who's been preeminent in that region for 70 years, is now taking a back seat, and other players such as China and Russia are going to fill that void, and that's not in our best interest.
Pat, is it too late? Can we get Riyadh back? Are they gone?
I think it's going to be a very difficult thing for us to regain anything like the kind of position we've had in Riyadh before. They'll maintain some kind of decent relationship with us, but I think we've essentially lost the essence of our thing. On a much more worrisome plane, I heard a bunch of Egyptian diplomats say in private today that, in fact, the Egyptian government is in itself thinking of the fact that they should move in some direction other than a strict reliance on us.
Pat Lang, he keeps the website Six Semper Tyrannis, and Larry Johnson for No Quarter. Mary Kissel of Wall Street Journal. I'm John Batchelor.